Welcome to the Navigator newsletter podcast for the month April 2016, or if you follow the Cometic calendar, the year is 6250. This podcast is narrated by Ifeomi Grant and is brought to you in three parts.
Greetings. Welcome to part three of the newsletter. Well, this is looking like a bit of a record breaker for me, but we're almost there now. This will be about 10 minutes, this final part of the podcast, and we're going to talk about Donald Trump. Now, that long prelude was really important because I needed to set the context of what previous presidents have done, just so when you hear a lot of the nonsense spoken about Trump, you can actually put it into proper context. So hopefully you'll understand at the end why I had to do that long introduction in terms of talking about Clinton, Bush and Obama. So, Donald Trump, he's what I'd call a meat and potatoes white supremacist. Donald Trump knows his constituency, his political constituency, and he offers them the raw red meat politics that they want. Unlike Africans, white voters make demands of their politicians, and if they don't deliver for them, they replace them with someone else. I watched a video of Chris Rock on YouTube. He was speaking at a gun control rally. And after openly admitting his political ignorance, which I think is never a good starting point, but obviously it's honest, he went on to tell the audience that they should support President Obama's stance on gun control because, quote unquote, he's our boss. And that was a really embarrassing speech, and it demonstrated the utter confusion of Africans in the US. Politicians are supposed to serve the people, not the other way around. Now, our people don't seem to understand that. You don't offer politicians servile, unquestioning support because people with any sense know that politics is a dirty business and that most politicians are untrustworthy. This is why most Africans in America deserve a Trump presidency. They've squandered the last 60 years chasing a pat on the head. They've adamantly refused to build an economy. And now that white America's taken the gloves off, they're completely defenceless. I don't imagine for one minute that Trump presidency, if he was elected, will be as rabid as his rhetoric. If you've even watched the campaign, you've seen that he's slightly kind of calmed down on some of his rhetoric, stepped back from certain positions. You know, he's become a Christian overnight to satisfy the evangelical constituency. He's playing the political game. And if he gets into a runoff with Hillary Clinton, you watch how he's going to sort of gravitate to what they call the centre. Not too far, but enough to try and pick up some of those floating voters in the middle who will decide the election. If he becomes president, he's going to find that he has to make a lot of compromises to get business done in Washington. However, if he does become president, what I think it will lead to is a resurgence in the confidence of angry, older white man. Veiled hostility will become even more open hostility. The police are going to be emboldened to really go after African-American males. So if you think it's bad with the shootings and killings and murders by the police, you probably haven't seen anything yet. And you're probably going to see endless examples of Africans being demeaned and insulted in public. And depending on whether he looks at the budgetary implications, he might expand the prison gulag system even further. Because we have to remember that Trump is a man who publicly stated that he doesn't care if the Central Park five or six are innocent or not, that they should still be in prison. They're the young men, I think it was five, maybe African-Americans, one Hispanic, who were wrongfully convicted of raping a white woman in Central Park and spent many years in prison before the single perpetrator was actually caught. And he said he didn't care if they were innocent, they should still be in prison. So when push comes to shove, and the spit is running down their faces, will Africans in the US grow up, man up, and start to act like a group under threat? Or will they continue to ask for what they want and beg Mr. Trump for what they need? A Trump presidency will bring this question into sharp focus. It would finally prove that good white people are not going to save us, that America has nothing but contempt for us, and I would have to say that's a good thing. There's no more room on the coon train. Well, there shouldn't be. and it's time to start fighting back. And I don't mean necessarily getting your guns and shooting people. I just simply mean it's time to start building a real community and organizing, which is what Africans United States, for the most part, have steadfastly and stubbornly refused to do. Now, the good news for the large Negro constituencies that the establishment, both Democratic and Republican, would actually prefer Hillary Clinton as president over Donald Trump. And again, I've put another link into the newsletter from The Guardian. The Republican power brokers are already plotting how they can prevent Trump from gaining the nomination at the Republican convention in Cleveland in July. Now, that can only happen if he fails to get the required number of delegates, which is 1,237 before the convention. But if he does fail to get that number, even if he gets very close, they've looked at a number of options to stop him from getting the nomination. So they've discussed changing the rules, bringing forward a third candidate against Trump and Ted Cruz, because I think if Trump doesn't get the requisite number, Ted Cruz might still fight on to the convention. Even talked about supporting a Republican, quote unquote, independent candidate to run against Clinton and Trump. They consider Trump to be unelectable because of his inflammatory rhetoric. And just as importantly, they're not sure if they could control him because he's independently rich and he's not a career politician. Now, one of the things that really worries the plutocracy about Trump is that he's speaking out against these so-called free trade deals that the United States government has been pushing for the longest time. You probably think about to NAFTA, North American Free Trade Agreement. You know, Bill Clinton was pushing that, and you know, Obama spoke about free trade deals, but now they've got the trade deals to end all trade deals on the table. So there's the Trans-Pacific Partnership, TPP. There's a Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, and there's the Trading Services Partnership, TISA, T-I-S-A. I'd really encourage you to find out about these trade deals, the US government seeking to impose them on their so-called partners, and what these trade deals will do. They'll effectively remove economic sovereignty from any nation that signs up to these agreements. So I've put a YouTube link of The Economist, who was, I think he was assistant or deputy, I can't remember the title. Paul Craig Roberts. He's an economist who was in the Reagan administration, and his post in the Reagan administration, Assistant Secretary to the Treasury. That's it. Assistant Secretary to the Treasury in the Reagan administration, and he formulated Reaganomics, and he's spoken out very strongly against these trade deals and how they would effectively destroy national sovereignty for any country that signed up to them. These agreements, they're going to be used as a tool to further enrich large corporations and impoverish nations. And Trump understands the impact these trade deals will have on most US citizens, hence why he's campaigning against them, because he knows he's touching a raw nerve in terms of people who've seen their jobs exported to Mexico or China or India. And you should note that all the career politicians, Republican and Democratic, are standing four square behind these trade deals. So if we think about Donald Trump, part of the problem with the analysis of him is that it's based on what you can call dichotomous thinking. That is to say, it's from the perspective that everything should be seen from the lens of either or, and it's almost never both. And in reality in life, things are often both or and rather than either or. So people say that Trump is a racist, which he is, and they end the analysis there. But what they need to recognize is that just because he's a racist doesn't mean he's not other things as well. He's not just one-dimensional. Very few human beings are. For most Trump supporters, racism is a necessary but not sufficient requirement for a politician they'll support. You need to understand, racism is necessary but not sufficient for them to support a politician. It's almost a given. And so when we talk about Trump and when we look at the negative effect of these free trade deals on jobs, he recognises that a lot of white America, who once considered themselves to be economic winners, now feel like economic losers. So what he's doing is tapping into their anger, their frustration, their hatred and their pain, but also the factual reality of what's happened to the US economy over the past 30 to 40 years, with the offshoring of jobs, financialization of the economy, and the use of public funds to pay off private corporate debt, you know, bailouts. If he was to become president, and if he was to actually address these issues, I think it's really doubtful if the plutocrats would allow him to see out a first term, and they certainly wouldn't allow him to have a second term. So the irony is that in economic terms, a Trump presidency is likely to be better for Africans in America and will certainly be no worse than a Hillary Clinton presidency. The thing that Africans in the US don't like about Trump is that, unlike the Democrats, in rhetorical terms, he feeds them a shit sandwich without any ketchup. Excuse my language, but I think it needed to be said. So, in conclusion, I hope I've given you a clearer perspective on the US presidency and the meaninglessness, that's easy to say, of the so-called divide between Republicans and Democrats. There really is no difference between them. It's a game. Any difference is likely to be in domestic policy, and it's likely to be in social policy. So they'll have arguments about gay marriage, abortion, maybe about welfare. But when it comes to the massive issues of life and death, you know, about offshoring jobs, financialization, being servants to corporations, endless wars, the Republicans and Democrats are on the same page. The conflict between them is pure theater. It's there to entertain the masses, while the super elite tighten their grip on every aspect of life on this planet. Now, I don't use Facebook that often. Been using it a little more recently to start get people ready for the Black Financial Fitness website. But I recently posted up a link to a documentary which was made in 2007 called The Great Climate Change Swindle. And that was first broadcast on Channel 4 in the United Kingdom. And it's one of the few serious documentaries that's been broadcast on terrestrial TV that examines the massive flaws in the so-called CO2 caused by human activity causes global warming hypothesis. And it's nothing more than a hypothesis. You can go to the newsletter and click the link, or you can just type in Great Climate Change Swindle and you'll find it. If you watch the last 10 minutes or so of it, you'll see that it talks about some of the implications of this whole global warming caused by human activity hypothesis, the implications for Africa. And you should be alarmed by some of the things that they're telling you there. The idea that global warming is some incontrovertible scientific fact is just complete nonsense. In my opinion, and looking at the interpretation, I'm not a climate scientist, not a climatologist, but looking at the science behind it, and also looking at the politics behind it, and looking at the IPCC, which is the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, if you understand their role and their agenda, you'll see that global warming is part of a population control eugenicist discourse on the one hand. And you should note that in 1971, the Club of Rome described man as humanity's greatest problem. And it's also a way of making vast amounts of money for corporations via a carbon cap and trade market that could be worth up to $2 trillion, not billion, $2 trillion on the other. So don't believe the hype. Think for yourself. Know for yourself. Don't necessarily believe me. Just go out there and do your research. See that there's been no global warming since 1998, and now the people pushing it are trying to find ways to massage and change the figures to try and show that there has been global warming, or to say that it's just a hiatus. It's ridiculous, some of the things that they're saying around this concept. There isn't time in this newsletter. Maybe I'll have to do a podcast on that, but go and do the research for yourself and look at both the people who advocate for it and also the people who advocate against it, and or who at least express some skepticism, people like Dr. Judith Curry. So here's a clue for you anyway. Global warming and global cooling is primarily due to changes in solar activity and not greenhouse gases, of which carbon dioxide comprises only a small percentage. That great big thing in the sky, that, you know, yellow goldy thing, the sun, actually has a lot to do with the temperature and has a lot to do with fluctuations in climate. through solar activity and what they call solar spots. But I'll leave you to go and do some research on that for yourself. As I said, you don't need to believe me. Just do the research yourself and you'll see that there's many flaws in the CO2 global warming hypothesis. So finally, we've got there in the end. A big thank you to all of you who provided testimonials for the new site. Thank you so much. Some of the testimonials are not up yet, but they will be. So don't worry, your testimonial will be there. It's important because recommendation is the most powerful form of social proof. And it's far, far better than me saying that what I've got to offer is useful. You know, as my mum always said, self-praise is no recommendation. So any recommendation from yourselves is really gratefully received. Remember, if you like what we do, support what we do, because nobody else will. Check out the new e-learning platform, blackfinancialfitness.com. Give me feedback via the survey that will be in the written version. Spread the word. And when the site goes live, become an affiliate if you like what I'm doing. And you can share in the success and we can help ourselves and help other people at the same time. So until next time, stay blessed. This is Ifeomi Grant signing out. And remember, it's time to win.